This book is the synthesis of, on one hand, the no-nonsense practitioner of uncertainty who spent his professional life trying to resist being fooled by randomness and trick the emotions associated with probabilistic outcomes, and, on the other, the aesthetically obsessed, literature-loving human being willing to be fooled by any form of nonsense that is polished, refined, original, and tasteful. I am not capable of avoiding being the fool of randomness. What I can do is confine it to where it brings some aesthetic gratification. This comes straight from the gut. It is a personal essay primarily discussing its author's thoughts, struggles, and observations connected to the practice of risk-taking, not exactly a treatise, and certainly, God forbid, not a piece of scientific reporting. It was written for fun, and it aims to be listened to principally for and with pleasure. Much has been written about our biases, acquired or genetic, in dealing with randomness over the past decade. The rules while writing the first edition of this book had been to avoid discussing A, anything that I did not either personally witness on the topic or develop independently, and B, anything that I have not distilled well enough to be able to write on the subject with only the slightest effort. Everything that remotely felt like work was out. I had to purge from the text passages that seemed to come from a visit to the library, including the scientific name-dropping. I tried to use no quote that did not naturally spring from my memory and did not come from a writer whom I had intimately frequented over the years. I detest the practice of random use of borrowed wisdom. Much on that later. Aut tace, aut laquare, meliora silentio. Only when the words outperform silence. These rules remain intact, but sometimes life requires compromises. Under pressure from friends and readers, I have added to the present edition a series of non-intrusive endnotes referring to the related literature. We have included these endnotes in the PDF that accompanies this program. I have also added new material to most chapters, most notably in Chapter 11, which altogether has resulted in an expansion of the book by more than a third. Adding to the winner. I hope to make this book organic by, to use trader's lingo, adding to the winner, and let it reflect my personal evolution instead of holding on to these new ideas and putting them into a new book altogether. Strangely, I gave considerably more thought to some sections of this book after the publication than I had before, particularly in two separate areas. A, the mechanisms by which our brain sees the world as less, far less random than it actually is, and B, the fat tails, that wild brand of uncertainty that causes large deviations. Rare events explain more and more of the world we live in, but at the same time remain as counterintuitive to us as they were to our ancestors. The second version of this book reflects this author's drift into becoming a little less of a student of uncertainty. We can learn so little about randomness, and more of a researcher into how people are fooled by it. Another phenomenon, the transformation of the author by his own book. As I increasingly started living this book after the initial composition, I found luck in the most unexpected of places. It is as if there were two planets, the one in which we actually live and the one, considerably more deterministic, on which people are convinced we live. It is as simple as that. Past events will always look less random than they were. It is called the hindsight bias. I would listen to someone's discussion of his own past, realizing that much of what he was saying was just backfit explanations concocted ex post by his deluded mind. This became at times unbearable. I could feel myself looking at people in the social sciences, particularly conventional economics, and the investment world as if they were deranged subjects. Living in the real world may be painful, particularly if one finds statements more informative about the people making them than the intended message. I picked up Newsweek this morning at the dentist's office and read a journalist's discussion of a prominent business figure, particularly his ability in timing moves, and realized how I was making a list of the biases in the journalist's mind rather than getting the intended information in the article itself, which I could not possibly take seriously. Why don't most journalists end up figuring out that they know much less than they think they know? Scientists investigated half a century ago the phenomena of experts not learning about their past failings. You can mispredict everything for all your life, yet think that you will get it right next time.